Okay, well, let's get started. My name is Courtney Darrow, and I will be the acting facilitator for today's webinar. First, I'd like to thank you for attending. We're excited to share the latest information on clean energy policy, technology, and science with you through our monthly webinar series. I want to take a moment and orient you with the control panel located on the right-hand side of your screen. Since all lines will be muted, we ask that you chat in questions, and they'll be fielded at the end of the presentation in the order in which they were received. I will be muting the phones, and this call will be recorded. All material from the presentation can be found on our website at www.cleanenergy.org. Today's presentation, hosted by Chandra Rawls, Diversity and Community Outreach Coordinator, will take a closer look on how poor energy choices in the past disproportionately impact low-income and communities of color. We will also share solutions on how clean energy policies can bring economic empowerment to low-income communities and communities of color. This webinar will also highlight opportunities for civic engagement and strategies for building diverse, non-traditional allies within the clean energy movement. For those of you not familiar with SACE, we are a regional organization with 5 offices across the Southeast. For over 25 years, we have been a leading advocate for clean, responsible energy choices on the federal, state, and local levels. We are a membership organization, and we would like to acknowledge the members on this call today and encourage those of you who are not members to join us. You can find out more about membership by visiting our website at www.cleanenergy.org. The phones have been muted, and I will now turn the presentation over to Chandra. Thank you again for joining us. Chandra?
Thank you, Courtney, and thank you, everybody, for joining the webinar. We can move on to the next slide where I will share with you what I will be reviewing during this webinar. So first I'm going to talk about how dirty energy practices impact public health, high home energy costs, and the disproportionate impacts dirty energy has from climate change. Then I'll also offer some clean energy solutions and talk a little bit about how they bring positive benefits to low-income families and communities of color. And then finally, I'll share a few strategies for how SACE has been able to do some of this work. Next slide. Next slide. So according to a report written by the Clean Air Task Force and a few other allies titled Air of Injustice, coal plant air pollution disproportionately affects communities of color. The report found that asthma attacks send African Americans to the emergency room at 3 times the rate of others, and 71% of African Americans live in areas that violate air quality standards compared to 58% of others. Next slide. According to a research brief by Dr. Robert Bullard of Clark Atlanta University, blacks in 19 states and Latinos in 12 states are more than twice as likely as whites to live in neighborhoods where air pollution poses the greatest health danger. Next slide. So there are many pollutants that are both seen and unseen that come from power plants, but in this presentation, I'm going to just focus on mercury. Mercury is a potent toxin that comes from coal-fired power plants and can cause a variety of health problems from learning disorders to heart attacks. Mercury can lead to a variety of neurological problems in children, from decreased motor, visual development, and vocabulary to severe cognitive impairment. In adults, mercury can negatively impact dexterity, concentration, and memory, cause heart attacks, and raise blood pressure. Research from the Environmental Protection Agency shows that mercury exposure can have even greater impacts on certain groups of recreational and substance anglers, including low-income southeastern white populations, low-income southeastern African Americans, low-income women across the country, and Hispanics across the country. Low-income southeastern African Americans are particularly at risk losing as many as 12 IQ points due to mercury exposure. Next slide. Humans are exposed to the most toxic form of mercury when it accumulates in watersheds and enters our bodies through the fish we eat. One-third of African Americans are active anglers and eat fish more often and eat larger portions of fish than others. Next slide. Additional impacts from dirty energy include high home energy costs for low-income homeowners. Typically, low-income homeowners live in older homes, making them vulnerable to rising energy costs of up to 25% of their total income. High energy costs hit low-income tenants especially hard. Since tenants pay the energy cost of wasteful buildings and appliances, owners have little incentive to pay for improvements. In some cases, utility appliance rebate programs can effectively result in the poor subsidizing the efficiency appliances of the more wealthy. So an example is, in order to receive a rebate on a refrigerator, one must have the money for a new refrigerator in the first place. This sort of de facto requirement serves to screen out the poor who are not in the market for new refrigerators. The poor's utility payments do, however, subsidize these utility programs. Next slide. Global warming or climate change may very well impact every individual's way of being, but those who are in poverty-stricken communities are the most vulnerable to global climate change. Communities of color and poor households within the United States will suffer more from the economic and health consequences of climate change than other Americans. Across the Southeast, the four main risk factors associated with climate change include drought, flooding, hurricane-force winds, and sea level rise. These risk factors will hit the poor and disadvantaged the hardest. Next slide. While it is true that social status, such as income and age, don't determine who will be hit by a natural disaster, it does determine a person or population's ability to prepare, respond, and recover when disaster does strike. Unfortunately, we were a witness to this fact during the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, where thousands, especially low-income residents, lost their lives and or were displaced as a result of the disaster. Next slide. So the good news is there are a variety of clean energy solutions presently available to help wean us from dirty energy practices and promote responsible energy choices that create global warming solutions and ensure clean, safe, and healthy communities throughout the Southeast. A smart solution to Southeast energy needs is a plan based on energy efficiency and renewables. Next slide. Investing in cleaner sources of energy will lead to improved public health through cleaner air and safer water. Preventing new coal plants from being constructed in our region can help reduce air pollution in communities that are disproportionately affected by poor air quality and can help improve our water quality. Next slide. Investing in clean energy will also lead to the creation of green jobs and promote clean energy investments that have the potential to generate upwards of 3 times more jobs than the equivalent amount of investment in the fossil fuel industry. We must ensure, however, that clean energy jobs pay family wages and provide opportunities for advancement along a career track of increasing skills and wages. Next slide. Investing in energy efficiency and home weatherization programs can deliver tangible financial benefits for our nation's lowest income citizens and would significantly reduce energy use and carbon dioxide emissions. At the same time, it would create conventional as well as green job opportunities. For multifamily apartment owners, more energy-efficient buildings may even generate more stable cash flow from rents. To the extent energy improvements were part of more holistic green building rehabilitations, rental properties may be more durable and higher performing and potentially more valuable assets to own over the long term. Next slide. At SACE, we have been dedicated to our mission of promoting responsible energy choices and ensuring clean, safe, and healthy communities throughout the Southeast. In doing so, we recognize the value in collaborating with community leaders and organizations who have a history of working in the community on social justice issues. Our proven ability to develop and maintain relationships with strategic partners has positioned SAFE as a leader in some promising initiatives in the near future. Next slide. We have partnered with community leaders and organizations to host community education forums and roundtables on the benefits of clean energy policies. We have also been invited to participate on panels and give presentations about clean energy. This has given us an opportunity to engage and mobilize a demographic that has been typically left out of the clean energy debate. Although we are not a work training force, SACE and our allies understand that green jobs only become available when we advocate and push for the best policies. We believe that overcoming poverty consists of more than putting food on the table. It is also about ensuring clean and healthy communities. Next slide. Other effective strategies include partnering with allies to facilitate contacts to Congress to advocate for green job creation, reduction in global warming pollution, and to offer support for transitioning to a clean energy future. You can actually visit our website and look at SACE's advocate to learn and get more resources about how to make contacts to Congress. Next slide. In just about a week, we all have an opportunity to partner with allies to support EPA on the Mercury Rule. On May 26th, the Environmental Protection Agency will be in Atlanta to hear public comments regarding the long-awaited rule to set national standards for mercury pollution from coal-fired power plants. Please plan to come and speak at this very important public hearing and to reach out to non-traditional allies and partners to engage them on this very important rulemaking process. Next slide. And finally, I encourage you to join SACE in our efforts to educate and reach out to communities about this very important work. You can follow us through e-newsletters and action alerts. We also have an interactive website with very informative information. You can also visit our blog, participate in further member webinars, and also become a member of SACE. We must continue to educate and advocate for equitable treatment of low-income consumers and marginalized communities on climate and clean energy policies. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Shonda. That was a great presentation. We're going to now open up the question and answer section of the presentation. Again, at the beginning of the presentation, I explained about the text panel on the right-hand side of your screen. Just chat in your answers, and Shonda will answer them in the order in which they were received. So the first question is, can you define the term energy justice?
Yes. It's really looking at energy policies that disproportionately are looking at past dirty energy that disproportionately impact low-income communities and providing justice for those communities through good, clean energy policies.
Okay.
I hope that helps.
The next question is, how does energy justice vary from environmental justice, which so many of us have heard about?
Okay. Environmental justice, just from energy justice, let me just say, is kind of a new coined term, and I think that SACE has been using that more often, again, because it's about energy and how our energy, poor energy choices have impacted communities. And so most often when you're working with advocates and allies around the environmental justice movement, a lot of it is around toxins, waste sites, et cetera. And so it's not necessarily to remove energy justice, to make energy justice and environmental justice be separate. It's just a way to talk about how past poor energy policies have impacted these communities. We actually believe that the only way to be impactful and to make a huge difference is if we join our allies and our brothers and sisters in the environmental movement and engage them on the work that we are doing in the energy policy community.
Thank you, Shonda. The next question is, can you speak more about the partnership SACE is building in order to work on energy justice issues?
Yes. So we have had the opportunity to do a lot of work in Atlanta, and we're building on some work in Florida. One of our biggest partners that we're proud to talk about is the NAACP, which has had historically been a partner in the community on social justice issues. We've been able to partner with them to talk about how programs in energy efficiency can lead to economic empowerment and development opportunities for low-income families. We've also, there's a couple of NAACP branches in South Georgia who are impacted by poor energy choices like coal plants, where there has been some complaints of poor health. And so we've been approached to work with them about education and outreach initiatives on advocating for clean energy policy. We've also had the opportunity to partner with the Concerned Black Clergy of Metro Atlanta, their network of pastors who meet every Monday to talk about how to bring positive benefits to their communities. And they've actually put together an energy and environment committee, which I co-chair, to really engage the community and talk about how energy choices impact the community. And then, you know, there's just Reverend Durley is also someone we've worked closely with. And I'll just say, I guess, to talk more about that, I think how SACE has been successful is that we've taken the time to build the relationships. And more often than not, we go into building our partnerships by really listening to what issues are plaguing the community, so to speak, and really trying to go back and strategize and think about how energy policies, good energy policies, can help to rid some of those, be a solution to some of those issues, and really being creative about it. So when people are thinking about, when people are thinking about poor health, we are able to really articulate some of what's contributing to some of the poor health and how we can be a partner to help bring some solutions to that. Sorry, so
thank you, Shonda. This is going to be our final call for questions. If you have any questions that you would like Shonda to answer, please chat them in now. The next question is, do you have any ideas on why minorities and communities of color have been left out of the environmental and clean energy movement for so long?
I think that there's a stereotype of what an environmentalist is. There are people who are there's an environmental justice movement that has been going on for years. And I just think that there until now, people haven't really been able to think about how these movements are intertwined. But I really think it's just going down the stereotypes. And then also there's just a lot of issues that lower-income communities and communities of color have to work through. And so sometimes environmentalism is not a priority. But I think I charge everyone who's participated on this webinar to think creatively and help to uncover how energy, clean energy policies can lead to solutions for these communities and help them to understand how these solutions can be effective.
So. Thank you so much, Shonda. The next question is, can you speak to some of the successes of energy justice? Have there been local communities that have been able to change a dirty energy practice into a clean energy solution?
Well, I know that there has been a number of coal plants that have been defeated across the country. I don't have any specific examples. The work that we're doing in Georgia and in Florida, I think it's pretty new. And so hopefully, we'll have a webinar moving forward that can showcase some of those specific examples. But I don't have one currently. I do know that there are some communities that we've worked in, we're just beginning to engage with that are looking at energy efficiency to help create stronger, more enriched communities. And so I'd be happy to come back and share a little bit more about those communities and how they've been able to build due to energy efficiency programs.
Okay. The next question are, what are the players in the industry doing to address energy justice issues, if anything? Do they recognize and address the impacts of their own actions on communities of color and minorities?
What are players in the energy industry doing to address? When you say players, are you saying utilities? I'm sorry, just to clarify.
I think the question was referencing utilities.
Okay. It doesn't seem like they're doing too much. In the presentation when I was talking about energy efficiency programs, there's not very many out there, and I know particular programs here in Georgia where you can have your refrigerator you can go buy a refrigerator and have it rebated. But again, if you don't have the money to buy a new refrigerator, then that program doesn't necessarily help you. But we don't have any, the Southeast doesn't have any robust energy efficiency programs that we know of. Other parts of the country do have better programs, but this is where we actually have a long hill to climb, and this is an area that we're still working in.
What are some of the best ways that advocates and traditional enviro groups can build bridges to more diverse communities to ensure that energy conversation includes a wider audience?
Some of the best ways is to, again, I think that it's really important to think creatively. I would absolutely find ways or learn more about the community that you want to engage and participate in their community meetings and build strong relationships. So what we've learned, and I'm sure most of us being organizers understand, that you can't just swoop in and go in and say, here's a solution to a problem that I think that you have. It's really about genuinely being engaged and hearing what the concerns of the community are and working with those advocates and allies to build on solutions. Because, you know, what we propose as a solution isn't always the answer. And so I think that it's really important that we partner and we think through what are best practices. And I also think that, you know, that we have to understand that energy and climate change isn't just about the polar bear and global warming, that it is about real people and real lives and being able to provide tangible examples. One of our partners that we work with often, Reverend Durley, sits on the Hugh Spalding board, and he always talks about how disheartening it is for him to see children of color and hear more about children of color going to the hospital because of high asthma. And so, you know, we really did a strong campaign and talked a lot about green jobs, but we've had to rethink our messaging about public health and how it impacts communities, because that's what mattered to Reverend Durley and his congregation. Another thing that's really interesting is he really cares about childhood obesity. And so we had to talk about sustainability and food. And so it's just really paying, I think, important to hear what the issues are in the community and to work with the community leaders and organizations to think of creative strategies and solutions together.
Thank you, Shonda. Next question. Outside of policy work, in what ways is SACE trying to work to engage low-income communities of color and to end pollution driven by economies, or to create new solutions? Can you provide examples to elaborate on how advocacy groups like SACE can ensure they are working in a diverse and affected community, diverse affected communities?
I think again, one of the let me just say that we understand, like I said in the presentation, that without good policies, green jobs could not exist, because we have to push for energy policy in order to create green jobs. So, you know, that's kind of the area that we play in. But we've also had to be very, again, very creative to engage low-income communities. And a lot of things that we're doing is around education and outreach. Because, again, it's important for us to be able to highlight the solutions. We've also served as a resource, and we've served as a liaison to some of the community action agencies and really provided information. So an example would be I had an opportunity to go on a tour of a community that was low income, and it was really a lot of seniors there. And it was really disheartening to see the deplorable conditions that these that our seniors were living in, where their doors didn't fit the hinges, and where hot water heaters were in the middle of their kitchen, their appliances didn't work. Being able to talk about how energy efficiency is a solution just so that they can have safe living conditions. But again, if we are not on the front end advocating for energy efficiency programs, then communities like this aren't able to access programs, won't even have programs to help build stronger communities and to have better living conditions. So I guess, you know, those are some examples of how we've been able to not necessarily do the policy end of it, to really do some education and outreach to the communities around around energy policy, and then also just, you know, highlighting. So here's an opportunity to have a better living condition, but then, you know, it also cuts your – there's a potential to cut your utility bill in half, which then can bring more money savings into your home. And so the other thing is we're actually continuing to look for partners and build relationships with economic development organizations so that we can build on the work that we're doing in these communities.
Well, thank you so much, Chandra. This is continue.
I just wanted to make sure that I answered the can you provide examples to elaborate on how advocacy groups like Safe Connection. Okay.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Chandra, and thank you all for your thoughtful questions. We really appreciate your attendance today. Again, we're really excited about our webinar series, as it is such a great way to connect with you, our members and supporters, on the critical issues we all care so much about. This has been the May edition of our monthly webinar series. We thank you for participating. Please visit our website and blog to learn more. Also, today's presentation audio will be posted on our website in the webinar archive section, where you can listen or download. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook to stay up to date, and we look forward to seeing you again soon. Have a great day.